you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. This is Punk News Podcast, episode 568. I'm John G. We work here in the division of Wee Wee Crimes. And we're back, and this is Wee Wee Crimes, part two of the Punk News Podcast. Long-term listeners will remember Wee Wee Crimes, episode one, where we investigated, detailed, and then charged Wee Wee Crimes, involving who? None other than Chuck Berry, king of all Wee Wee Crimes. And now we've got more Wee Wee Crimes, yet again. I don't know what it is with these rough and rowdy musicians who love getting involved in the senior side of the urination, but here we are. And listen, it's a day at Punk News, and here to investigate the crimes with us are and more. Are you ready to investigate these crimes?
I have my poncho on, and I'm ready to.
Sam Barrett, do you remember the Wee Wee Crimes episode 322?
No. No. And I also have a poncho on and an umbrella.
Well, listen, everybody, this episode is really taking a turn for the guar, let me tell you. Hallie Bullock, are you happy that Punk News is now venturing into grosser territory, or is this not thrilling to you? What's your perspective?
I want to hear the Law & Order gavel after every time you say Wee Wee Crimes. The Law & Order gavel, maybe followed up by, like, a toilet flush. No, like, maybe just the sound of, like, something splashing. I don't know. As long as you add that sound effect, then I'm, like, perfectly okay with this conversation.
I mean, frankly, the whole reason that I structured today's episode was just so I could say Wee Wee Crimes. But she's like, I just think the phrase is hilarious. Anyways, listen. This is the Punk News Podcast, where we do indeed cover Wee Wee Crimes whenever they come up.
Also, Kaka Crimes. Yes! We've talked about those as well, haven't we?
Okay, my poncho's not ready for that.
We talked about the turnstile related Kaka crimes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, I forgot. That's right. The mysterious circle pit crapper who never got caught and never got prosecuted. Everyone's
circle
enraged.
Pit crapper.
Everyone was enraged, but no one did anything about it. Listen, people, if you want justice, you need to go out there and you know, make sure that everyone's treated equally under the eyes of the law. You know, we can't.
If you don't know who took the crap, what exactly are you supposed to do?
DNA tests.
I still have questions about how you even pull off something like that.
Well, I mean, just the fact that they did pull it off is like, you got to kind of respect that.
Yeah,
right?
No, that's magic.
Real stealth crapping.
Yeah.
Skill.
If someone can figure out how to steal the Mona Lisa, someone can figure out how to crap in a circle pit unnoticed, you know? But in contrast today, and listen, we're not going to be scatological every week, but we are going to be scatological this week. In contrast, later on tonight, we're going to be talking about not someone didn't do releasing bodily waste, not in secret, in broad public, which shocked the world. The world was shocked by a story we're going to cover today. Before that, we're going to do some mail. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Lonnie. Lonnie says, I usually love listening every week, but what is the track keeper? What was that? I have no idea, from Lonnie. Lonnie, I'm sorry. If you don't remember the track keeper, you're only outing yourself as not an old school Punk News podcast listener. All the old school Punk News podcast listeners, people don't remember how popular the Track Keeper was. I mean, we're talking like Do the Bartman levels of popularity, the Track Keeper. So I don't know what to tell you.
Maybe was it Lonnie?
Lonnie.
Maybe they blocked out the Track Keeper. Maybe it was like a traumatic experience that they just like had to block out mentally.
Could be. This is from Jared. Why is John always so dismissive of Hot Water Music? They are the definitive or core band, the band that defined Punk News. I feel sorry for John that he will never know the joy of singing along to Remedy with a group of close friends. I question John's credibility because he doesn't like Hot Water Music or any or core band. You know a punknews.org core band. Why do you hate Hot Water Music so much? From Jared. Well, I don't hate hot water music. It's not my thing, you know. The funny thing is, when I first started writing for punk news, I didn't know that there was like a sound. And I remember people were like freaking out over Crime, and everyone's like, "Oh, Crime and Stereo, Crime and Stereo." I was like, "Oh man, this must be like a really good band." And I really remember when people were freaking out over Brian Fallon. What's his band? Senior and the Queen. What's that band?
Gaslight Anthem.
People were like freaking out over the Senior and the Queen 7-inch, the double 7-inch. And I got it. I'm like, oh man, this must be like the greatest thing ever. And I heard it. I'm like, what? Like, that just was not what punk was to me at all. Like, at all. And it's just because I came to punk in a much different way than I guess most of the orgcore readers. I guess most of the orgcore readers came to punk because their friends were listening to it. And I guess it kind of was the next step after Green Day. Whereas I kind of discovered punk in isolation with the Clash and the Sex Pistols. And so my understanding of punk was, I guess at the time I didn't know that punk had evolved into kind of more melodic stuff, which really kind of freaked me out. And it's bothered me through today, 2021. So I don't know.
Well, isn't that what makes us all awesome gems on this podcast?
Yes, it is. It is. If we were going to do the other story today, this was going to be my intro. So I'll do a watered down version of this intro, but then I'll do like the real one later on. I will say, and I've said it before, about 3 or 4 years ago, like the thing in punk was I'm not special, you're not special. Even though, like, because by saying you're special, I don't know, it's not punk, you know. So like, bands would like have their record release. One of my most annoyed memories is I went to this band's record release show on New Year's Eve, and they did a 17-minute set, and they didn't like say it's our record release show, and they ended before the countdown for New Year's Eve. And it was like 11:30, the show was over, and they didn't like even say like New Year's Eve. Or I'm thinking like, it's your record release show on New Year's, and you're like not doing anything special. Like, if you don't think it's special, why should I think it's special? You know. And so I actually kind of think now that punk is more inclusive, one of the many positive side effects of that is you don't see like that M.O.R.E. band that actually is pretty cool, Pussy Gillette. Like, you don't see Pussy Gillette saying, you know, we're not special, we're just going to play our song, and everyone is equally as good. You say Pussy Gillette, like, we're Pussy Gillette, we're here to rip it. Or the song with the girls that, like, run around with the obelisk. Like what's that band?
No Bro.
Like, you don't see No Bro saying, we're not special, you know, we're just going to play, you know. They're like, we're No Bro, we're here to rock it out, you know. And so it's like rad. So the point being is I do really enjoy right now how punk, it's not so, like, faux Catholic, if anything, or faux what, like, you know, I'm not special, you know, I'm not going to celebrate any of my achievements, and, you know, everyone will act like no one's doing anything cool, you know. I hate that atmosphere, and that's kind of faded away. The reason I'm doing this is, A, the Punk News Podcast is the best punk podcast there is, people. It's one of the best podcasts there is. I'm sorry. It is. It's the truth, you know, in that, A, we have very intelligent discussion about punk. If you listen to some of the other punk news punk podcasts, like, well, I don't even want to name names, but there's other punk podcasts where they're like, oh, yeah, Black Flag, yeah, wasn't, you know, Henry in that band or something. Like, they're purposefully, they know the reality, but they're purposely acting like aloof. They don't care in order to make themselves sound cooler, which I hate. Then there's other podcasts where everyone agrees with each other, and they're like, yeah, everyone's dumb but us. And so the listener kind of thinks, well, because I'm in these guys' groups, then I'm not dumb either. But I hate that echo chamber atmosphere, you know.
That's like podcasting in general, right?
Yeah, well, you're right. And the political world is much, much, much worse. You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's why I can't stand political commentary, like political, like whatever. Like, it's like you're all just patting yourselves on the back. Like, it'd be so much more interesting if you were like, you know what, our party was wrong this time. Like, they never do that. It's so annoying, you know. Anyways, the point being is the Punk News Podcast is we've got different styles, different points of view. Everybody talks in good faith, and that no one's trying to like make anybody feel bad, but we can disagree good naturedly. And also, no one's trying to put on airs. No one's like, oh, I love this band, we really hate that band. They say, oh, I hate that band, when they really like that band. Like, everyone is free to really express who they are. Not to mention, we got Sam Barrett, the prototypical org core listener. She knows more about org core than anybody else, and she's a big fan. We got M. Moore, who loves everything from the grindcore to the sugary pop punk stuff. Woo! So we got that wrench, and we got Hallie Bullitt, who knows everything about 90s and 2000s punk. She's been in bands. She's rad. We got a really rad crew right now, and I just think it's the best show. I realize I'm bragging and patting ourselves on the back like the echo chamber that I'm just But we are. We're the best. We're the best. And I'm not trying to say it. We're great. So anyway, yeah. Yeah. Take that, Jared. Take that.
Oh boy.
I did want to say it's funny that this has come up because I somehow stumbled upon like a release that I should have heard about like 6 months ago. This in fact, Sam, you wrote about it on the website that the Fiddlehead record that came out.
Oh yeah, that record is so good.
Fiddlehead
is such a good band.
that album is amazing.
Yes.
And John, I did have the thought of like, I was like, oh, this release is amazing. We should have talked about this on the podcast, but this is not the kind of punk that John likes. So we did.
Exactly.
That being said, that release is, in my opinion, is just completely amazing.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be a gatekeeper, and I'm really not, but I also have to say, I don't really like, and it does amaze me. People are like, oh, I like punk, and they listen to like stuff that could be on the radio, like Turnstile. Like, and I'm not trying, you know, we'll get into Turnstile a little bit later because I've lost in Turnstile as one, you know. So just me and all the street punkers are just going to go to some dive bar where everyone's over 50, 60 years old, and they like to say, oh, back in the day, the UK stuff was great, and we're all going to stand there and be like, yeah, man, punk was great in 79, and then they all just wither away into nothing. Anyways, you can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. We've got Wee Wee Crimes to discuss, but before we do Wee Wee Crimes, let's play a song. I think we're not going to talk about a whole lot of bands on tonight's episode, right? So that gives us some room to play.
Little wiggle room.
We got to play this. I don't want to play this, but we're going to play. This is Code Orange doing their hot new track called Out for Blood. Check. I'll let everyone else respond. It's like, so Adam White, who of course listeners I'm sure know, was a big part of the Punk News podcast for a long time. He's really into this guy called B.A. Johnson, and B.A. Johnson has this song called Skinny Jeans, and the song is about how B.A. Johnson doesn't want to kind of like, he doesn't care about fitting in or being cool anymore. He just wants to do his thing. And there's a line in the song, I lived through Sublime the first time around. I'm not going back to that shit, which I don't agree with that line because Sublime is amazing, but I love the sentiment. Listen, people, I lived through nu metal the first time around, okay? It was bad then. Like I remember like seeing like Slayer and Gwar and Anthrax and Motorhead, Halford, Solo. All those bands had nu metal bands open for them. And I do kind of miss the 90s concerts, which were rougher than two. And I guess, like I said, I guess the 80s were even rougher than the 90s. But like the 90s was, it was so much more of a hostile place metal-wise. Now if you go to metal, people just kind of stand there. Maybe they mosh or they go get a craft beer. But that was, the 90s was so much gnarlier in the metal. So anyways, like Slayer would be there and it'd be like three opening bands. Like a band called Orcus, a band called Chimoira, a band, there was this one band, Stuck Mojo, where the one guy hocked a loogie on the other guy, and that guy licked it off his arm and hocked it back. It was the grossest thing I ever saw. And it was actually the grossest thing I ever saw. It was in the top 20. But anyway, so when those bands would play, the audience literally would boo nonstop from the very first second of the first opening act to the very last second of the last opening act before Slayer or Gwar or whoever. It would be, boo, you suck, F you. And then they'd use like the F word, not the four-letter F word, like the six-letter F word, which was not cool, but it was a gnarly time, you know. And it'd be like, you know, you a bunch of pansy. Like it would be, and they would like throw stuff at the band. It would be nonstop booing, and that's the reception that new metal bands received. And everyone who was bad then, and there were new metal fans then with the terrible haircuts and the back and like the super baggy Jenkos and the, you know, the chains that like they bought at Hot Topic, and even they were embarrassed to be new metal. Like if someone said, oh, you like new metal, and they'd be like, you know, I like Slipknot, you know, that like they like wouldn't admit that they like new metal, because I don't know if anybody did like new metal, because it was so terrible, it was so bad, it was wretched. And so, I mean, it's just a bad genre. I hate to say any genre is bad, but nu metal was a terrible, stupid. It's everything that's intelligent about heavy metal taken away. It's everything that rocks about heavy metal taken away. And what's left is the cliche of heavy metal played by people that aren't good at playing heavy metal. And it all kind of sounds the same. And plus, everyone dresses like they're in the Matrix, which is even then. You know, and it's just bad. It's just bad. And the haircuts are bad, you know, and the facial hair is bad. It's bad. Bad, bad new metal. And so anyways, every once in a while in music, we'll see people say, oh, you know, like about 15 years ago, like Pitchfork brought back disco and disco was cool again, which actually there was some good disco, you know. And then, you know, in around 2010, people brought back like really boring soft rock like Vampire Weekend. It was like, oh, Vampire Weekend's so good. Well, it was boring, but it wasn't hard. Like, there is no redemption for nu metal. And I'm astounded that Code Orange, who has flirted with nu metal, has now gone all in on 1999 style nu metal. And it is bad. I mean, it is bad. And I'm not trying to dog these guys. Like, I guess they like that. I don't know how anybody could like this. I really don't. Like, does anyone like this? Or does it like nu metal was like a disgrace when it existed. And people just made fun of it nonstop. Like, you were a pariah if you were a new metal band, or and like the thing was, like, a lot of new metal bands were like new metal because I think they wanted to be popular or become famous, but none of them ever did aside from like Korn, you know. And even Korn is kind of a joke now, though some people think Korn is cool again, which is Korn is kind of silly,
but
you know.
Korn was like massively popular and made like so much freaking money, didn't they? I mean, they were like massively, I couldn't name you a single Korn song, but like I know that was like a cultural phenomenon, you know.
Do you think Code Orange like wants to be Korn? Is that the plan here? Like, yeah. I'm astounded and flabbergasted by this song about how new metal it is and how bad it is and how cliche it is. This looks like it's Stuck Mojo from 1998, or I'm trying to think of some of the other bad new metal bands from that era. You know, there were so many of them. I saw all of them. They were terrible. You know, Puddle of Mud, Drowning Pool, you know, you know. Hallie, did you love this, or did you really love this?
I didn't hate it as much as I really probably should have. I've found something about the chorus to be like a little catchy and like kind of like a poor man's Nine Inch Nails, you know. There was something in the chorus that I was like, oh, I can't deny that this is catchy, but I'm with you. Just the aesthetic is so like barfy. And like the video was in my opinion, just terrible, embarrassing, terrible. Like, again, just sort of like, just sort of full of bad cliches. And it was like almost funny. Do you know what I mean? Like it almost just came out the other side to just being like almost farcical of whatever that genre is. But I did find the chorus like catchy. I loved that first like Nine Inch Nails album. And so there was like some piece of my brain that like wanted to like hook onto this, but it's just, it's, it, it it's some it's just other people's good ideas sort of recycled and not well, not that well executed. I was curious to see that people were even like that interested in talking about it, because I just would have thought that like punks would have just kind of dismissed it offhand. You know what I mean? I don't know. You like this. You like, you can go like dark and gothy. what did you think of this? You should be kind of throat clear. What's coming?
This was one of the first words. So I did notes while I watched it. And the first thing was Zoinks Scoob. And the second thing was.
Wait, the second thing was what?
This sounds so old. So, yeah, I like some industrial stuff. I like some goth stuff. I love Slipknot. I don't, there's no other like new metal band that I really like. I agree, John, they're all kind of, but I really didn't like this. The chorus was okay, but no, I couldn't. It sounds like they're trying way too hard. And then when he does that voice thing, it sounds like he's on the bat, like on the toilet, and he's trying to push. Like he sounds very strained, and it sounds very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's very like,
Yeah. and I think I was a comment on YouTube. Someone's like, "Oh, this would be perfect for WWE wrestling," and I guess they do something. Yes. Like they have a partnership with them or something. So it's like, yeah, I could see that being a great wrestling song.
Yeah, the wrestling world never let go of this aesthetic, right? The wrestling world has held on to this like style of music and dress like for, 30 years now. It's like truly baffling. Sorry, go on.
Well, it's the theatrical doom and gloom, right?
Yeah. It's like it's all so fake and it doesn't seem authentic, and it's like if this is how they really want to make their music, again, go for it. But like it just nothing clicks with that. Sam, what did you think of Code Orange?
So they were originally like a hardcore band, right? Like hardcore. So like
Sam, what kind of hardcore band were they?
Like. Nonsense. So pretty much I was like, when I didn't even see this coming, so I was like, okay, what is up with the synths? I was like, there's some kind of weird, like, you know, that industrial synthy stuff. It's as if it was like chewed up in someone's mouth with like Slipknot and then like regurgitated. Like that's like essentially how I felt about it. Plus the video, what's up with the big red words, the lyrics? I was like, how do you have a music video and then add in lyrics? I was like, am I reading subtitles? Is that what's happening? Is this a foreign like movie for me? I'm not into this. I don't think I was ever really a fan of Code Orange, even though I know people were really into them. So really this new album, probably, or whatever, this old album, last year's album, I was like, I'm probably never going to pick it up on Spotify or anything to even care to listen to it.
Do you guys think this is what they wanted to do? Or do you think like the record labels, like, we want you to bring back new metal? Like, do you guys really think this is what they wanted?
No.
I
like it.
I don't know, because I think the last album was like very much a hardcore album. Like this seems very left field, you know? If they put out an EP and the EP was like, you know, more like this, then we could probably say, oh, okay, I guess we could see that coming.
I mean, I don't think a label can just like make a band totally change their sound into something they don't want to do. I mean, I don't see how that would be possible. It just seems like maybe the band has some nostalgia for this era of like rock, and maybe they just see ska having a comeback and You know, they're sort of like, well, anything's possible. People be nostalgic for like any, you know, like they must like this stuff and think that it's ready for a rebirth. Don't you think? John, you really think like a label could just arbitrarily be like, change your entire sound. You have to.
I think a label could push them in a certain direction. You know, yeah. I mean, yeah. Actually, people would be surprised that like people think that every independent label operates under the Discord or alternative tentacles methods. Like, give us what you got and we'll put it out. You'd be surprised at the labels that say, well, I don't like this song, or you need to change this song, or we'd like you to change this song. Not you have to, but we'd like you to, which is sort of like you probably should. That being said, Code Orange isn't on any tiny label. They're on like Century or something, which is a bigger independent label. They're on Roadrunner. Yeah. So, I mean, do I think they're like, no, we don't want to do new metal. The label's like, you'll do new metal or you won't be on Roadrunner anymore. No, but I think they're like, you know, we really want to bring in this producer, or we think you should, you know, we really think that you can, because I mean, people forget, like, for not so much now, but for a time in the 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, there was a number of bands that were so obnoxiously bad that they were popular. That band, Attila, the Crab Walk band. Sam, what was the Crab Walk band, Sam? Broken Side.
I don't even know.
and so maybe they're going for like so obnoxiously bad that it's popular. Maybe. It's a puzzle. I don't have the answer. It's a puzzle that we'll never know. Yeah, man. Trench coat and glasses does not look cool. I'm sorry. Honestly, like punk and metal have a lot of cool looks, and you could say some of them are cliched and overdone, you know, like the battle jacket or, you know, the, you know, all black, and but it looks cooler than the trench coat and glasses. Anyways, are we beating them enough? I'm sorry, Code Orange. Not my thing, but maybe some other people's thing. Here's something else that is not my thing, but it's clearly one person's thing at least. So, there's a band called Brass Against that I never heard of, but actually that is kind of a big band because they're opening for Tool in Europe next year. And you say, oh, so John, why are you talking about Brass Against? And here's why. Last week, they were playing Rockville Festival in Daytona on the NASCAR track. NASCAR wasn't racing at the time, of course. And they were doing a cover of Rage Against the Machine's Wake Up. The singer of Brass Against is a singer called Sophia Urista. And she said, I've got to take a whiz. Who wants me to whiz on them on stage? And this guy climbs up on stage and she whizzes all over the guy. And it's important to point out the guy did not seem to protest. In fact, if you watch the video, which I don't recommend, he's like thrilled. Like he's like into it. And then like, he's like really into it, like really into it. And then, well, that's it. You know, after that all went down, the band issued a apology. Sophia got carried away. That's not something the rest of us expected, and it's not something you'll see again at our shows. I guess because they don't want a particular clientele coming to every show. Thanks for bringing it last night, Daytona. Meanwhile, NASCAR has banned the band from any of their venues. Maybe if the same thing happens again. I think people were just taken aback about how random and weird and gross and naughty this was and how things got to there. Hallie Bullitt, what's your take?
I was not that shocked by this. I don't know. Like, so what? Also, I don't know. I don't care about this band. They're like, as far as I can tell, they're just kind of like a Rage Against the Machine cover band. Like, everything I looked up of theirs that was like popular was like a cover of another band. I mean, I get they seemed like fine musicians, but like they're not punk. I just kind of don't care. I'm not that shocked by people peeing on each other. And I don't know. I just don't. Whatever. Who cares?
So you you feel like the internet going nuts over this is like that faux internet, like where people go nuts over something not worth going nuts over.
It does not seem worth going nuts over to me at all. I don't know. Am I like not? I don't know. Am I missing something about like what, how shocking this is? I just don't find it that shocking. I don't know. We're punks. Like people do gross things on stage. Like I saw like the singer from the Candy Snatchers have to be like taken to the hospital because he sliced open his own head on stage and then like just began to bleed everywhere. And like they had to stop the show. And like, I just like, I've seen grosser shit. I don't like, it's like, I don't know. Musicians, like, they do theatrical things on stage. And she really did have to pee, though, didn't she?
Yeah.
It was like, what yeah. a lot of pee. I was like, oh, she really had to go. Like, she had to make a she had to make a thing out of this, because, like, otherwise she was going to have to just be like, y'all, I have to go pee.
Yeah, that was a very steady stream. Yeah, and yeah. it looked yeah. like he was being, like, showered at, like, the Niagara Falls made of the mist. Like, it really looked like that, and I was like, whoa.
But wasn't it weird also how, like, okay, so she pees on him, he lays down, he's fully into it, and then when she's done, which is, like, quite a while later, he gets up and he kind of, like, flings the pee onto, like, the front yeah. rows of the audience, and then she gets, like, super upset and irate about it, which is, like, oh, I thought, like, we were cool with pee. Like, I thought you were cool with pee just a second ago, and now you think pee is, like, so gross, and this guy has to. She starts calling security to kick the guy out for flinging pee. It's like, well, but it's your pee. You're the reason there's pee here. Like, why are you getting so upset about it? The whole thing was, I don't know. Someone else explain. Someone else have an opinion about this. I find it just baffling and not, for as much as I've been talking about it, I find it not that interesting.
Well, so I found the way that she took off her pants, like, and her pants was so tight, looked really tight, and it almost looked effortless. And yeah. all of that happened, and then she just, like, after she was done, put her panties on and her pants on so quickly. I was like, wow, that is some pro move there. I'm baffled. I don't know. Maybe I have issues, like, taking my pants off peeing or something. But, yeah, no, like, I don't know what she wanted him to do. Like, he clearly needed to get off of the stage. If
well, I think he was getting off on the stage, Sam.
yeah, in different ways. But I was like, you know, I was like, did she want him to just lay there in her urine? Is like is that something that, like, people like? I don't know. I don't know. This entire story is weird. What was even weirder was when it happened, my husband was like, you need to see something at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, what the heck? Because I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you guys.
Why?
Because Sam goes to work at 7.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm a normal human. yeah, so he goes, oh, I'm going to send you this. You need to watch it. And I'm like, no. If you're telling me this at 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't need to watch it. And he's like, it might be taken down. I'm like, oh, now you're sounding like a conspiracy theorist. Yeah, maybe this is a conspiracy theory.
Well, it sounded very conspiracy theory how you were talking about it, because it sounded like you thought maybe she had, like, rehearsed the pants, like the like she had, like, rehearsed the pants move. Like, she had planned it all along. Like, she had worn, like, the perfect pair of pants to, like, yeah. allow herself, like, easy access to her pee hole.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I've been on the side stage at, like, you know, Irving Plaza. Like, one time I got up there for No Facts. And I think one of them, I don't remember if it's El Jefe. Or someone needed to pee so bad that they ran off stage, because there's a bathroom on the side, with the guitar, and he was still playing while he was whizzing, and That's then great. Ran out without washing his hands or flushing, because they were, like, in the middle of a, you know, a song. So I was like, huh, so it's possible to pee and if you really need to pee. Yeah, I think she could have, you know, excused herself, like, or, you know, timed it better, like, maybe when they have, like, I don't know, were they headlining? I don't even know what happened. If they headlined, then maybe during the encore, who knows?
And more, did you approve?
Well, here's the thing. I was okay until the guy splashed the pee. And then it's like, no, because you wanted to be peed on. These people did not want to be peed on.
Ah.
Do not cross that line. So that was, and like, because it's COVID time, so it's like, you know, you get splashed with someone else's piss, like, no, unless you're consenting, but like, I don't, the front row, I don't think was.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, going with the conspiracy theory, is I kind of think it's a publicity stunt, because yeah. In the, like, the whole thing, like, she points to that man, he's wearing a camera on his head, which, first of all, like, is weird. and I'm glad that wasn't the shot that we saw.
But that shot exists, which is like really fascinating. That shot exists somewhere.
Unless it was a fake camera. But, you know, like she singles him out like kind of right at the beginning of the video, and, you know, he gets up there and all that. Like she doesn't seem bothered, and like the band doesn't seem bothered, and the band's. Yeah, like, the band's statement was, like, we didn't know she was going to do this. It's like, dude, like, she said, I'm going to piss on this guy. I'm going to piss in his mouth, like, at least 3 times before it gets up there, you know? And none of the band members looked uncomfortable. And I get, like, you're performing, you're professional, so you're putting on a face. So I might not have shown they were uncomfortable. But also, like, if it's unexpected, you'd be like, holy shit, she's actually peeing on the guy, wouldn't you? But,
yeah, and I thought that too. Yeah. I was like, these band members just seem like this just seems like any old thing that would happen in a show of theirs, right? Like they're just still playing. They are. They're like kind of acting like nothing strange is going on around them.
And then I saw she released a statement too, and she's like, I love my family, the band, and the fans more than anything, and I know that some were hurt or offended by what I did. I apologize to them and want them to know that I didn't mean to hurt them. I'm not a shock artist. I always want to put the music first. I'm grateful for all of your continued love and support.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. Like, something's just not adding up, you know? And, yeah, like, now we're talking about them. We know who Brass Against are. We probably watched a video, you know? Like, they sound decent, you know? They're not awful. They sound decent.
No, no, they could play. They could definitely play. I think the thing I'm not convinced of is just, like, I don't know. Yeah, like, it just seems like they're, I don't know. Unless my perception's just off, it seems like they're just famous for playing Rage Against the Machine covers, which really confuses me. Because that seems like you should just be playing more like just like Down the Shore or something. Like, why are you, you know what I mean? Or I guess that like a on the NASCAR track. But like, I don't know. Yeah. So, something about this whole thing is very strange.
So okay. Now I feel like weird because I'm thinking about the guy. I'm like, if he went back into like, you know, the where everyone else is, no one wants to stand near him. If he drove with people and he's sitting in the back seat, no one wants to sit with him. I would probably kick him out of my car.
Yeah. Imagine, all right, Dave, time to go home. It's like, oh, and it was like, so how was the show for you, Dave? And he's like, you know, but listen, while we're at it, what I want to know is how come the treads on Buzz Aldrin's boots don't match the impact left on the moon surface? How come the American flag on the moon is up, you know, and waving, but there's no wind on the moon? You know, it doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense.
No, come on. Are you for real?
I thought we were talking conspiracy theories here.
I know, but I'm just asking, are you for real in that camp?
Howie Bullitt, you insult me by even suggesting that I would think that was real. What I am real about is
you just had so many details about it. It was a very convincing delivery. You should be flattered that I believed you.
The reason is people definitely, and we'll get back on track. There's this video with this guy that is like constantly harassing Buzz Aldrin about like, it's fake. And he like runs up to Buzz Aldrin in front of like a hotel and he's like, admit it, he calls him like a coward or something. And just Buzz Aldrin, who's like 80, like socks him so hard.
I love it.
It's great. So Google that video. Anyway, listen, here's another thing that's great. The Dead Milkmen aren't. Well, the Dead Milkmen are featured in the pilot episode of a pilot called Puppets in Paradise. The Paradise is a creation of director Brian Duss, who I believe is like the cousin or maybe like the cousin-in-law or has some remote connection to Dandrew of the Dead Milkmen. And the show basically stars a German puppet named Hans and a real person called Jenny as they try to start a travel show. The first episode is in Philadelphia, and if the series gets picked up, they're going to go all over to Germany and Japan and all of these other places. And the Dead Milkmen feature prominently in that Dandrew gets interviewed, but also they have a brief shot or a scene from the Dead Milkmen's like Halloween show from like 2013, I think it was. Which I was there. I don't have any big commentary. So I thought it was mildly amusing. I think it could use some tightening up. I think the jokes could get punched up a little bit. But if they're going to make a travel show that has like punk bands here and there and other wacky stuff, and I like the two characters, so I think it's got promise. And really, I just love seeing the Dead Milkmen in kind of a TV-type scenario. Sam, was it you who said you thought it was like delightful?
Yes, I found this so delightful. I actually love puppets. So this was like right up my alley. And for some strange reason, I have like an ongoing running joke with some of my friends about the name Hans. So the fact that this puppet's name is Hans and he is a comedian, I was all for, and especially if it's like, you know, weird humor, I love. So it does look like I'm looking at the website for Puppets in Paradise. It looks like this basis might be a regular. I don't know. It says under Meet the Cast, he's listed. So who knows? Like, maybe we'll see him more. I don't know. Maybe this puppet just has a fascination with the Dead Milkman. I don't know. But yes, I do find this great, and I want to see more of this. So it better get picked up.
I didn't love it. I thought a lot of the writing and acting was just like, it seemed a little amateurish to me, but I will say that I thought the interview that the puppet does with Dan Stevens, like it was, I thought that was, that actually had me laughing out loud. Like I don't know. It seemed like a lot of it was improvised. It seemed like, just for a bassist, he had like some serious comedy chops. And then the person doing the puppet, like, again, also like has some serious comedy chops. That was, to me, was that part of it was like the most promising to me. I was almost like, maybe this pilot just has too many ideas thrown into it. Like, maybe they just need to take the parts of it that were like truly successful and like just focus on that. And I there was something in that interview that I thought was just like really, really entertaining and like clever and funny. And did you like this?
Yeah, I thought it was good. There were some parts that like I had to pause it because it was like I had a good laugh and I just had to like watch it again, like watch part of it again. And like one of the parts that really got me was when the puppet calls the human friend. She's like, "Oh, I broke up with this guy," and then the puppet's like, "He was a fascist." And then, "Where is he from?" And then, like, that whole thing. I don't know why that was one of my favorite things. The I really liked the interview. I thought it was really funny. And again, the other thing, like it was really cool when they're showing like parts of the show and like Hans the puppet's just like in the pit. that was great. So I would definitely look like watch more of it if it gets picked up, and I hope it gets picked up. I think there's some promise.
You can see Dandrew Stevens in person along with Joe Jack Tack about the Dead Milkmen at the Punk News New Year's Eve Mega Bash with Colleen Green, Froggy, and Crazy in the Brains December 31st at Philomoken, Philadelphia. So come on down. And let's talk about a song and then we'll play it. Mac, I'm not trying to be a dick here. I never can get this band's name right. Mac the Verse Game have released a new song. The new song is called Lover. And it's out now. And more. What'd you think of Lover by Mac the First Game?
I thought it was interesting. Before I talk about
Mac Fabriscate. That's it. I got it. Max Fabriscate. Woo!
So the band name, I looked it up. I Google translated it. So we'll see if that holds up. But it translates to the power holder in Swedish, which I thought was really cool. So, yeah, the song, it's really interesting. There's a lot, going on. Like, it's softer, but it has, like, that quiet power to it, you know, where they're not yelling, but you're really intently listening, and they're kind of commanding your attention. And I thought it's a really interesting song. Like, the song has an atmosphere. Because I'm trying to think of, like, the best way to describe it, but that's the only way I can kind of, like, picture it. Because when I think of the song, it's like, I kind of picture, like, a globe, not a globe, but, like, a snow globe. And it's, like, you know, there's a specific place that you think of when you listen to it. So, like, any song that can do that, I think, is really cool. So that's off their album, For Outing. And I haven't had a chance to listen to it fully yet, but I want to, because, again, like, they're kind of, like, indie rock, sort of post-punk, but more indie rock. And, it's interesting to hear something, and I don't listen to a lot of, well, maybe I do. I don't know. I want to check more of it out. Hallie, what did you think?
Yeah, I think you should check more of it out. It was like really, like, I thought this song was fun, was good. It reminded me a little bit of like the darker and like gothier stuff that like The Cure would do. But so I was like intrigued enough to like check out the rest of the album. Like, the album got like a decent album on Pitchfork. I was like, okay, what's this band about? Like, what are they up to? And like, I would continue with that comparison to The Cure in that they can sort of do this really wide spectrum of stuff. Like, they've got this really gothy number, but like they do some stuff that's just straight up like, just like bouncy poppy new wave, and some stuff that's definitely a little more indie rock, like bouncy indie rock. But it's somehow it like they do tie it all together. There's like something very particular about their sound and the instrumentation and her vocals that it is all tied together. It's not just like random. So I liked this song, but actually when I checked out some more of their stuff, there were like there were other tracks off this album that I liked even better. Like, This Time is really nice and poppy. They have a track called Tomorrow that's totally worth a listen. And one that's called Mactologen. That was maybe like my favorite one. It just reminded me of some of the poppier stuff from The Cure that I always really liked. And I don't know. I thought this was pretty cool. I mean, John, you can be totally down with the new wave thing. Like, were you into this stuff?
I dug this. I like The Cure. I love good goth. I'm very selective with goth that I like, but I do love the good goth that I like, particularly Bauhaus, the greatest goth band ever. They're so goth that they're not even goth. But also like Sisters of Mercy. I don't love Christian Death. You know, one 12-inch single of Alien Sex Fiend, because as great as the 12-inch singles of Alien Sex Fiends are, after 9 minutes of the same thing over and over and over, you're like, all right, I get it. You're spooky. All right. You know, anyways, this is cool. I dig this. I know this band's been hyped for a little while. And I mean, it's not even goth. I mean, it's more like post-punk meets goth meets new wave. You know, it's kind of that, it's cool, you know, but I dug it and I like it and I enjoy it. And, I like how spooky sounding it was. Sam Barrett, what do you think?
So when I initially listened to the song, I had no feelings about it. I don't know, like, what it was. Maybe it was the time frame. I don't know, whatever. But I listened to it again, and I was like, oh, this isn't that bad. You know, I did hear that there was, like, you know, there was, like, an ethereal aura to it. If I can even, like, make that into, like, a sonic something, you know? I was like, yeah, there is. It's very pretty. It's very, I think it's very polished. Yeah, I think I might have to, like, check out the rest of the album to actually make a concrete decision whether or not I care about this band or not. Because I am into, like, you know, the new wave. I'm also into, like, dream pop and stuff like that. And this seems like it would fit into that category if they had a baby. So, yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
Halle Bullet is Alien Sex Fiend, the best named goth band aside from Bauhaus. Meanwhile, M. Moore is Skinny Puppy, the worst goth slash industrial name band.
Yeah. It's in rhyme.
You guys don't like the name Skinny Puppy?
Not for goth bands.
Not for a goth band. You're right. Yeah. It does. It sort of gives you. It gives you the idea of something different. Yeah.
Like honestly, like Skinny Puppy could be like a bad '90s like funk metal band. You know. Anyways, let's play some MacTheraScan, and we will be right back. And we'll hit you some quick stories and wrap this on up. And we'll be right back. Then we're back, and it is Record Store Day, Black Friday, next week. And for the first time in, I don't know, 10 years, 9 years, John won't be there. And that actually is not because of any commentary on Record Store Black Friday, because I've got other things going on. But that being said, I'm not bummed that I'm missing it out at all, really, because anything that I want is actually pretty much delayed except for, like, the Joe Strummer 12-inch, which is going to be $7 in 3 months on Discogs, so whatever. Anyways, because of Adele and actually, everyone's blaming Adele for the record delay. I don't think it's fair to blame Adele. I think it's, you know, it's not Adele's fault, you know, and like, if it was, you know, I'm trying to think of another, you know, if it was Bruce Springsteen, would people be so anti-Bruce? If it was a Young Thug, would people be so anti-Young Thug? You know, I don't think so. I think people just kind of pick on Adele because, well, for numerous reasons. That being said, I don't care.
Love to pick on female pop stars. It's like one of our culture's like very favorite fucking fetishes is just to like rip on female pop stars.
People forget at Kanye's height at how much of a beating Taylor Swift. Like, I'm going off the trail on this, but I don't care. I don't even really own any of her albums, but as a musician, as a pop star, I think Taylor Swift's fine. I think she's cool, whatever. I love how she's totally striking back against the holder of her old records and re-recording all the albums, which is so punk and so awesome. Mm-hmm. Also, I love how she literally signed CDs for independent record shops to sell. Only independent record shops get to sign Taylor Swift CDs, which is – you can't get them at Target, which is so cool, you know. Also, and this is the thing, is when Kanye was at his height and Taylor was still rising, remember that Kanye jumped up and stole Taylor's award or whatever? And then for like 2 years, like Kanye was like just busting on her nonstop. And I was like, yeah, take that, Taylor. Kanye rules. The worst – the climax I was when he had a video where he was naked in a bed with like a mannequin of Taylor Swift. And I'm like, that is so not cool. Like, if he did it with like Beyonce, everyone would be mad. Like just busting on Taylor Swift. Like, and like, no one was like, this is sexist or this is wrong. Like everyone was like, oh, that's good. Go Kanye. And now Kanye's burning and Taylor Swift is killing it. So I think anyway. The point that's just a rant, you know. It's just
so.
Taylor Swift seemed like a perfectly fine, nice person. Like you see her interviews, and it could be that she's just like I interviewed the Jonas Brothers once, and they were cool and they were fine. And the question is, are they cool and they fine, or are they just really good at doing interviews because they've been trained? I don't know. That being said, Taylor Swift hasn't done anything that you can ding her for, so it's not fair to ding her because you don't know. You know. So Taylor Swift is cool. And I'm glad that she's doing her thing. And why am I so talking about Taylor Swift? Because
talking about Adele, and then you were talking about Record Store Day. Yeah, so reel it back.
People are like busting on Adele. It's not Adele's fault. If anything, it's your fault for buying records from Czech Republic and not from America, not Adele. You know. Anyways, a whole bunch of Record Store Day records are pushed way back, and they're not even going to come out until next year, namely Alice Cooper. And frankly, I'm happy because I won't be able to go to this Record Store Day, but the Alice Cooper record that I want is not coming out. So John gets off scot-free. honestly, this Record Store Day list, I think everyone agrees, this Record Store Day Black Friday list was the most underwhelming list we've seen in a while. So everyone's kind of just shrugging their shoulders. It seems like there's no riot. There's no like, oh, I can't. Everyone's like, whatever. I just don't care. The question is, has Record Store Day worn itself out? Because last year they did 4 Record Store Days, and this year there were supposed to be 3. And actually, a lot of cool stuff came out. It seemed like a lot of people were worn out from it. I actually kind of wasn't. Is Record Store Day killing itself, or is it doing it the best to survive? Will this be the end of Record Store Day? And yet again, I had thought that record stores at this point were basically pro Record Store Day, and that, like, remember for a while there's the whole thing that Record Store Days actually were damaged by Record Store Day, but it seemed over the past few years Record Store Day was positive for record stores. But I actually saw a whole lot of record stores kind of like saying, oh, you know, Record Store Day is brutal. I'm glad we don't have to do it this time or as big this time. So I really don't know. Sam Barrett, I know you and I are record mongers. Do you care this time around? Because I don't care. I don't care.
So I normally don't care for Black Friday. I remember when they started doing Black Friday, and I said, do I really need to wake up another Saturday and wait in line for 6 hours to get a piece of vinyl that I'm going to cherish and cry after? I'm not waiting in line. There's nothing I want for this Record Store Day. I right now, as an old person, older person that has been collecting for a while, I have a love-hate relationship with Record Store Day. I love that things are coming out that I might have never gotten. I hate that others really things that we don't need, like, you know, I keep on picking on Kenny Rogers Christmas, because I don't need that. I really don't. And if you need that, I don't know if we could even be friends.
Sam, I'm going to, if you need that, you can literally go to the dollar bin and pull it out of the dollar bin if you need it.
Correct. You don't need to spend $30 on it. Plus, there's always an upcharge to Record Store Day things. Like, more so, yeah, it's still, I guess, like, exponentially same rate of upcharge because, like, you know, back in the day, you would spend $20 on a record and it would be, like, $30 on Record Store Day, right? Yeah, so I'm kind of glad that that isn't happening for me. I do wish that Record Store Day was one day a year, like it was meant to be. Maybe call me a purist, maybe call me a grouchy lady. I don't care. But yeah, I kind of want one day Record Store Day where it's like a whole bunch of releases and for me to actually, like, you know, find things and dig and stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
I was like, I don't have a lot to say about this except that there was something in my reaction that made me laugh at myself because I was scrolling down this list of things that are definitely going to be late, and then they have a separate list of things that they just are waiting for further information because they're not sure if they're going to be late or not. And one of them was like this Foo Fighters release. I guess it's like a Mark Ronson version of a Foo Fighters song. And it was like, I read that and I was like, oh, this is serious. I was like, if Grohl and Ronson can't get their record, like, then nobody can get their record. Like, if Grohl and Ronson, who I feel like rule the music world, there was something about that where I was like, oh, this is serious. But I speaking of Foo Fighters, sorry not to go on another tangent, but did you guys see this like completely distressing and disturbing video that the Foo Fighters put out where their faces are like on the faces of synchronized swimmers? Did you guys watch this?
I saw some of it and I was like, oh my god, this is weird. Like, I love Learn to Fly. I love that music video so much. Only because they're actually cross-dressing, right? And I guess it makes sense with the context of the song title, right? Yeah. But I was like, this is, like, so beyond weird.
It's like, so weird.
It's so weird. I can't.
Like, you don't want to watch it, but you also kind of can't look away. You're like, please just make it stop, but I can't. I somehow can't just turn it off. It's, like, so bizarre. Okay, sorry, back to Record Store Day. Did I kill the Record Store Day conversation? Sorry.
And more, are you straw? Is your Black Friday Record Store Day ruined? I guess it won't be Black Friday for you because you're in Canada, right?
Yeah, I don't know when things are. I want to watch the Macy's Parade, and I don't really know when that is, but I'm going to find out because I want to see the big balloons because they have a Baby Yoda balloon.
Yes.
I saw.
Oh, they do?
Yes, excited. It's new. It's very That's new awesome. This year.
USA, USA.
Oh, boy.
And speaking of USA, Turnstile is going on tour across the USA. And they're going to – and Canada. It starts in February and it runs all the way – actually February, some dates in April, and then a whole bunch of dates in May, opening to John's – I don't say John's chagrin, but John is now torn. It's Turnstile with Citizen and Ceremony and also Ikulu, Truthko, and Coco and – I don't know who Coco and Claire is, but we'll see. It's a lot of bands for one show. I will say that. But so, anyways, Turnstile is now a legit, really big band. I mean, they are big. I was wondering if like Ceremony saw as it's you know, it's not the Ceremony tour, it's Turnstile. Oh, and Ceremony's going to be there, which I was really surprised by. And it seemed like Ceremony was kind of cooling off. So I would think that if Ceremony's going on tour. They would headline their own tour, but maybe they got an offer they couldn't refuse, or maybe they just thought it would be good to speak to the youth again. I don't know. I know Hallie Blue. I know you're a Turnstile fan. Are you excited for this? And is Ceremony being downgraded, or is Ceremony acting strategically?
I don't know what to make of the Ceremony thing, but I am excited about this. I am probably going to get tickets to that Brooklyn Steel show. I hope there's no cow crimes at the show. If there's wee wee crimes, I'm going to know who my first suspect is. It's going to be the woman from Brass Against, because we know she's a self-peer. Sam, will I be seeing you at the Brooklyn Steel show?
So if I'm not in Canada, I will be at that Brooklyn Steel show. But so when I saw this crazy lineup, right? The first thing that came through my mind is, right now we're dealing with going to shows, and you know, like recently Bad Religion just dropped off, I think, two of the dates of their Bad Religion Alkaline Trio show due to possible COVID, you know, like whatever. So this might actually be a smart move on the tour's package, because if you have more people and one of the bands drops off, you still have enough to see. So that's like
insurance.
kind of like, yeah, what sucks is probably going to be like, what, a half an hour set or something like that. But yeah, no, I'm thinking that like this might be like a strategic move on, you know, just sustaining a tour, because it's, you know, it kind of sucks if you're a person like, because what I've been seeing across the board right now, and I've been going to shows, is like, you know, we have to be contingent on these bands being healthy, not catching COVID, and, you know, doing their due diligence and protecting the rest of us, right? Some of these states are not like New York and having a vaccine mandate, so. And I've been seeing that a lot of things are happening like across the country of, you know, not playing things, which then becomes like a logistical nightmare, I guess, for the band, because then if they postpone that date, then that means they have to come back there, like figure out how to maybe route another tour or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I do want to go if I'm not in Canada. Doing Canadian punk stuff, maybe. Yeah, I do love Glow On. That is amazing album, and good for Turnstile for headlining this.
Right?
Yep. Em, what do you think?
So, I didn't like Glow On. I gave it a shot, and it just didn't click. Not a fan of that. I didn't mind Time and Space. And like the thing is, I didn't like Glow On, but I've seen videos of Turnstile live, and they look nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Like they look just amazing. So it's one of those things. Like, would I go? Because, you know, like to see Citizen and Ceremony, and I really like Ikulu's really good. I've never heard of Truth Cult or Coco and Claire, but again, you know, that's part of the fun, is like going and not knowing the bands and everything. So like, do I go for just to see their energy on stage if I know I don't really like the songs, or do I just steer clear of it and wait and just watch YouTube videos? Like, hopefully someone takes YouTube or videos and posts them on YouTube. So like, that's just kind of what I'm thinking. And also it's in May, and I don't know where we're going to be in May, because I think it's 2 days before the show in Toronto, the Turnstile show in Toronto. Amel and the Sniffers are playing in Toronto, and I want to see them. But again, it's like, it's in May. I don't know if things are going to be like, what the situation is for COVID. So that, like, that's a big concern. Just with like, I'm fully vaccinated, but I live with like someone who can't get vaccinated. So I don't want to put their health on the line just to like go to a show. So I'll probably just wait and see stuff on YouTube. But I think it would be a really cool show, especially with all the bands. It'd be long, but it'd be good.
Well, I've also been finding that, like, shows aren't selling out anymore.
True.
Like, I think, like, in New York, like, even if it's quote-unquote sold out, you can still find tickets because people are either dumping them or, you know, the venue finds 100 extra tickets. I don't know, whatever. You know, like, because they're returned or something like that, because of whatever reasons. So it's, I do think that there is wiggle room to waiting it out and seeing. Like, I do think it is pretty ambitious saying in the spring this is happening. Especially since, like, what, like, 5 months ago, like, literally tour, no, not even, like, 4 months ago, like, tour dates were popping up for, like, the same month.
Oh, did we lose indeed. John? No, oh, there he is.
Indeed. Coco and Claire are kind of one of these very modern dream pop-ish groups, like hip-hop. It's almost like trip-hop, frankly. So that's who Coco and Claire are. I'm going to go because I want to see Ceremony. I'm puzzled by this because it seemed like Ceremony was kind of winding down because Anthony was doing his solo thing and Ross was doing that band Spice, who I just saw like about 3 weeks ago. And it seemed like I was getting kind of Modern Rancid vibes. Like, yeah, they're still a band, but no one really wants to be there. I don't know if that's the truth of Ceremony. It seemed like they were winding down. So it's interesting to see them going on this tour, which they're kind of the veterans here. And I don't know if they're trying to move on to the next phase or reinvigorate, or they're just there because it'll be a fun little tour. I don't know. Let's wrap this up with one last story. Sam Barrett, tell us about Dave House and his new Christmas tune.
Yeah, so Dave House, you know, he has a solo project. He's also in The Loved Ones. He's also a rad person from Philadelphia. he released a very, very early, in my opinion, Christmas tune. So he covered. Yeah, a little bit, you know.
Getting out ahead of the competition.
Exactly. So he covered Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which I think is an amazing little cover. It is streaming right now. I love Dave's voice. I've loved it in The Loved Ones. I've loved it in his other projects. I think it's just like a very iconic, like, punk voice. If, you know, you listen to the type of punk I do. So having his voice in something like this makes me want him to do an entire Christmas album. I know I'm saying this because I said in, I think, the last episode how, like, we don't need, was it Billy Idol?
Yeah.
Yeah, Christmas. But I would want a Dave House Christmas album, so hopefully that happens. So what do you guys think about this?
I mean, I don't love all Christmas music, but Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is the fucking best Christmas song. It's so good. It's like the lyrics are so tender and like so heartbreaking, and it's, I just like, I love, I think it's kind of like the perfect song. I thought this was like a good little cover of it. I'd still rather hear Judy Garland do it, but you know, if I've listened to that like 20 times and I just like need a palate cleanser, I could like listen to this version of it. It didn't like there. I thought it was good. I love this song. I feel like this song lends itself to just sounding great no matter who's doing it. It's sort of like an unbeatable song. Em, what did you think?
So first off, it's way too early for Christmas music. Personally. Yes. I thought the cover was good. It's really funny because I always thought Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas was such a passive aggressive song. Because it was just like, you have yourself a merry little Christmas. And like, that's how I always like kind of took it. So this was just like, it's so sweet and it's so nice. It's like, oh, okay, I guess I misread the song. But I thought it was good. I like the sleigh bells in it. You know, it's not bad. It's a good cover. John, what did you think of the Christmas song?
Too early. No Christmas song should be released before Thanksgiving. That being said, I don't really have much room to speak because I'm like, Billy Idol's Christmas album's the best thing ever. Everybody shut up. No, it's cool. I generally like Dave Howes, and I think this is a fine take on the song. And listen, there's worse things you can do than put out Christmas music or just nice music, you know, namely put out new metal, which is much worse than
new metal Christmas album.
Oh.
You know it's been done. You know somebody's fucking gone for that money grab.
So anyways, that's all we got for this week. And listen, any parting words and more with regards to your Christmas pro or con or is there any way that we can warp other Christmas songs to having like a passive aggressive meaning, such as sleigh bells or let it snow, you know, like let it snow all over you, ruin your life. You know, is that what the song is? And more.
I think so. I think all Christmas songs can be sung in a very passive aggressive way. One of my favorite things, it's not necessarily like passive aggressive, but it's the Paul McCartney thing, and it's like having a wonderful Christmas or whatever. So
having a wonderful Christmas. I love that song.
It's a good song. And I saw
that's a bad song, you guys. I'm sorry.
No.
That's such a bad song.
No.
Oh, okay, sorry, go on. Sorry. That was rude of me. Go on.
But I saw something online and it was like, it sounds like, the verses are, you know, like he's doing something like kind of dark and spooky. And then someone walks in on him. So he goes, having a wonderful Christmas time, really cheerily. And then every time I hear the song, that's what I think. And it makes it so much better.
I think you need to release an album that's just like a spoken word album where you give like your very twisted like interpretations of classic Christmas songs.
Oh my God, you should have the U-log playing in the background.
Or like some sleigh bells in the background, yeah. Something. Yep.
And have the satanic Christmas sweater.
Yeah, like almost do it like Bad Religion, but don't do it like Bad Religion.
That would be good.
Well, there's advice everyone can take, almost like Bad Religion, but don't do it like Bad Religion, which I think is a great quote. And listen, we'll reach the podcast at punknews.org, and we'll see you next week.
I don't know how it started. I suppose it was about the 10th grade. I'd never bought much music. I just listened to whatever was played. But there was classic rock there on the radio, and it was blowing my mind. And it was all the records no one wanted now, so they were easy to find. So I started getting LPs. They only cost a little, and these LPs were all the ones I needed from the 60s. With psychedelic art on all the great sleeves. Much cooler and much cheaper than the CDs. And that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. There wasn't any internet. A lot of times you just took a shot. Pretty soon you figured out which records would be awesome or not. If the year was from the 60s, it was probably good bang for your buck. If the year was from the 80s, it was guaranteed to totally suck. I started learning about the LPs. At that time, education just cost low fees. $3 for this Dylan record, oh yes please. And the Cream and Rolling Stones and Arlo Guthrie's. A giant treasure trove was all for a penny. And that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. By 1994, I had completed all my Zeppelin and Floyd.
Zeppelin and Floyd.
I had all the early traffic, but their later stuff just made me annoyed.
Made me annoyed.
You realize that the radio just scratches at the top of the dirt.
Top of the dirt.
When $4 can buy you Crown of Creation with the lyric insert. So I had a lot of LPs. My friends were mostly clueless. It was just me in an ocean of cheap vinyl like a black sea. I hardly had an income, but it was easy.
an awesome world awaited with the GDP. And some places in the garbage, they were just free. And that's the way I got the disease. I got the disease for LP. And then the 90s ended and I wasn't no teenager no more. But I started getting shakes if I was passing any used record store. I got the finger muscles you develop when you flip through a stack. Crate digging for the cheap and obscure, and there was no turning back. A total junkie for the LPs, and nothing in the world was gonna help me. CD quit no sooner than CL3s, and there was nothing like the thrill of getting lucky. I'd be lying 5 cheeks to the three. Cause the world was still awash in LPs. And I still had the disease for LPs. Nowadays that stuff is so expensive I don't bother to try. Everything's reissued and plus everything is priced really high. The field is overcrowded, it's impossible to get a good fix. So I walk right past the records, and I flip through all the used compact discs. Yeah, nowadays it's mostly CDs. No one wants to keep them, so there's plenty. Folk and punk and private press and rap and indie. Bonus tracks and liner notes are just empty. As long as I can still make a good discovery, I